You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Yasser Bolomans. Yasser, thanks so much for being with me today.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, too.
So, Yasser, where are you? Where are we talking from? Where are you now?
Yes, I'm in London now. I just arrived a couple of hours ago because there's an exhibition there.
So let's talk about what you're, and is this your exhibition, or what is it that you're in London for?
Yeah, there's an exhibition called Hollandaise. It's about the influence of Dutch art to the English art world and the other way around over the last hundreds of years. And two of my ceramic works are shown there. And there's an opening tonight, and it's a nice occasion to visit London and to look around a little bit.
Very nice. So maybe we should talk about the works in the show, but maybe begin with what is it that you're making now? Can you tell us a little bit about what's happening or what you're doing in your studio recently?
Yeah. What I'm working on, what I just recently made a work of wood. What is in the show is works of ceramic. And my work is very often inspired by ornamental or what you could call decorative art. And I try, and it very often has a conservative connotation, that try to make it, to give it a more progressive feeling. And that's for me a nice experiment to see what kind of shapes and how I can use these ornamental shapes in a way that it has more progressive quality.
Hmm.
That's what I'm
progressive
trying to
meaning, mean, progressive meaning as opposed to decorative, something that would. I mean, the way I read decorative is not always bad, but
no.
I suppose if it's not challenging at all, it's not.
Yeah, you could say like when before the modernist or the start of the modernism as a. There was a manifest, and the title of this manifest was called "Ornament and Crime." So they really made an argument that ornament was connected to people in power or systems in power to keep the normal people down and modest. And in that way, you could see ornaments and decoration as conservative. And then, you could argue that the modern movement wanted to get rid of this, wanted to get a blank sheet again, and so people could, so the world would be more fair or more democratic, you could say. But you could also argue that now this modernism and the straight line is also became a little bit a dogma with Corbusier and all the building blocks without ornaments that have been built over the last couple of decades. And so that made me curious, like, if you want to reintroduce ornaments and decoration again, how can you do this in a more progressive way that it doesn't put you down as a, or put you in place as a human being, but challenges you in a way to think. Mm. So that's
and what were the first works that began exploring that? Do you remember the first works that did that go very
I remember. I remember very well, because first I made a little bit more conceptual art. So, for example, I made a clock that only shows beautiful times. So if it was like 12:12, then it was repeating, or 12:23, then it was counting up, or like 6:09, then the 6 turned into a 9, and then the one beautiful time was shown until the next beautiful time. And at one day, one moment after my graduation, I had a residency at a ceramic workplace. It's called European Ceramic Workplace in the Netherlands. And a lot of people, architects, artists, are working there for 3 months and with ceramic, with clay. And they like to work with people that don't have experience with clay. So I was one of them. And my first plan was more a conceptual plan to make an airplane out of bricks. And the plan was to make a Boeing 747 out of bricks. But then this, because of the limited amount of time, like 3 months, I would maybe only be possible to make the cockpit. But then the plan was to work on this project the rest of my life. And then maybe when the next residency would have been in China or in America, and I and the plan was to continue where I ended in the first residence. And so in the end of my life, there would be an airplane made out of bricks spread all over the world. So that was the idea. But then I started making these bricks, and then I enjoyed making them not square, but making them with decoration shapes, ornamental shapes. That's how I
So you were making bricks, though. You were actually making the bricks out of clay?
Yeah. So that's where I started, and then that became a little bit boring. And then I started, instead of making bricks, I started to give them more shapes and to experiment with shapes. And then I thought, hey, it's nice, because in art school it's a little bit forbidden to at least the art school I went to, it was a little bit forbidden to talk about beauty. Things should be interesting or challenging, or the beautiful was not very much appreciated. But then I thought, but maybe it's more interesting to kind of trust the instinct for beauty and to hope it will lead you somewhere interesting instead of the other way around. So I started to make these bricks in more interesting shapes to me, and then I started looking around the city where I was in. It's Den Bosch. It's an old Catholic city with a nice old Gothic church with a lot of ornaments. So I was inspired
by this. Where was that city?
In Den Bosch. It's in the south of Netherlands. It's a city also where Jeroen Bos, the famous painter, comes from. And so this for the first time I made this step from more conceptual approach to the other way around, to think while making and to follow the little bit instinct for beauty.
Well, in some of those churches, that's a great example, which is why I asked where you are, because some of those structures around there, those architectural structures, sound like, in what you're talking about, perfect examples of maybe the peak of that kind of ornament or decoration.
Yes, sure. And it was also, it's very beautiful in one hand, also a little bit scary in the other hand, because this church also used these ornamental shapes in a way to sell their thoughts or their beliefs, also to suppress the people and to make them modest to the people in power.
Right.
So that's it's a dubious thing.
So then you began getting influenced by those shapes, and what was the next thing that you were making after that that reflected that process or that thinking?
When I was making these bricks, I had another exhibition in the same time. I was invited a little bit last minute. For me, with this exhibition, two things came together, because this exhibition was a parade through the streets of Amsterdam. And because it was a little bit last minute, I used cardboard to make costumes that also could be used as sculptures after the parade. So I just cut out flat shapes and put them together, like maybe you know these wooden dinosaurs that you have flat sheets of wood that you put together. And I used these techniques from cardboard. And then because I was working in a ceramic workplace, later after this exhibition, I used the same technique with ceramics. So I made big slabs of ceramic and cut out shapes and then put them together. And that gave it a nice extra layer, because this sheets of clay look quite vulnerable, or some people somehow you think of it like as if it's metal. But the other hand, you also feel it's quite a vulnerable piece. So I like the combination of the strong shapes, the vulnerability of the thin sheets of ceramic. So that was the
and so that was also bringing in the shapes themselves. I mean they're not narrative, but they're also bringing in you're saying another decorative quality that sounds like it's also creating some tension with the fragility of the material as well, if I'm understanding.
Yeah. that's what I try to do. It's nice. And also what I like about the flat shapes is that it also has some that it also looks like really a decor of theater plays, you know. So like they used to make in Versailles, they used to have make decorations with thin wooden panels that could pop up and go down again. And I like to have this, I like this flatness. So in that way, it doesn't become too serious, maybe, or too,
Right. It's a very interesting concept, the idea of bringing decoration back, and in the context you talk about it, I mean, in a way that is also idea-based, the way you're approaching even the idea of what decorative means. But it also seems to be an important issue aesthetically. Is it something you hear other artists talking about? And what I mean is this idea of, that you didn't hear about beauty much, you know, in an MFA program, or artists don't talk about that a lot. We discuss ideas and... I talk about that a lot with people in these interviews.
Yeah.
Do you feel that more people are talking about beauty, or this is still something we don't hear much about?
I understand why they in art schools don't talk much about beauty, because like people that don't know much about art, let's say like this, they come off very often very quick with, oh, is it beautiful or not, you know, and then they don't really look, then that's an excuse sometimes to not really look very good to an idea or to an artwork. So I understand that they want students to learn first that it's the idea is the most important, or like the combination, but I think the combination of how something looks and the idea and something doesn't have to look beautiful to be beautiful, you know, this is all very clear. But on the other hand, to my feeling, there was not enough, maybe let's call it trust in the intuition for beauty. So I think there's an interesting relationship between beauty and ethics. And I think it's also interesting to kind of trust your intuition for beauty and then believe there can get an interesting concept out of it instead of starting with the concept. And what makes it more interesting for me is that when I have a concept first, then sometimes the artwork becomes illustration of this concept. And when I start making things and keep on thinking while making, then it brings me more often on towards new ideas. So then the artwork is not an answer to a question, but it's more the question itself. And that's, for me, more interesting. So that's what I discovered while making this.
That is very interesting and could really be explored a lot, because, I, as you're saying that, it also strikes me that some of the first experience I had with art, and I've heard this from other people too, you know, for me it was... I was seeing Michelangelo's sculpture when I was 16 in Italy, the Pietà. You know, the beauty of that was kind of overwhelming, right? I didn't need to know anything about it. I wasn't studying art then, but there's also that experience that could presumably, like you're saying, be used a little more intuitively. And it's something that, you know, that we could know then about the ideas behind the Pietà, which I'm not as interested in, really. But the sheer beauty of it, the sheer really decorative quality of it is extraordinary, right? I mean, but that's a very very different thing.
Yeah, you could say that. You could say that this beauty is maybe radiating, or this beauty is there because of the craftsmanship and the skills and all the effort artists put in. Maybe the beauty is referring to all these qualities somehow. Maybe
somehow,
part
the
of
beauty,
beauty.
Is, to me, it was it seemed kind of almost impossible that something like that could be made. That's what I think sort of awed me a little bit. I was shocked, but the beauty was also something that seemed, you know, that I think, to me, only Michelangelo had at that time, but there's incredible sensitivity to the form, the body. There's an emotional quality to it. There's something psychological. We're pulled in. We don't know why. No. I'm not interested in religion or Jesus or anything, but yet I love this work, and I don't know. And I don't know why.
Maybe this sensitivity. Maybe the sensitivity is an interesting thing. Huh? That is somehow for me in interesting artworks. This always, yeah, this sensitivity is very important.
Yeah, sensitivity.
That's difficult,
yeah.
To explain, but
It sure is. So let me ask you this: in the show that you're having today, can you describe to us a little bit the pieces that are in this show that you're going to the opening of tonight?
Yeah, I can do that. It's a little bit what the works that I described already. So so these are ceramic pieces made out of flat sheets put together. But this time I made them into suits you could wear from ceramic. So it makes it extra daring, or I'd say it's extra challenging. They are almost impossible to wear, so they're now shown on wooden structures that carry them. But what's maybe interesting to finish or to talk about is like the, for me, the next step after I dived into this ornamental shapes and this decoration, for me was to look into parades and especially into carnival, because I thought, like, I'm from the south of the Netherlands. It's a Catholic part of the Netherlands. So from when I was young, they celebrate carnival and they make big sculptures and they drink a lot and there's a lot of music. But it's really a festival of the people. And when I went to art school, I didn't see any, and then I went with my friends that were not from the art school. I went to the carnival parade, and then suddenly it struck me that there were no serious artists participating in the carnival parade. And I was thinking, like, this carnival parade is a really nice platform for art, because it's everybody goes, right. The whole city goes to see it. There's sculpture, there's performance, there's music, there's politic issues are addressed. So from then, that moment on, from 5 years ago, I became interested in carnival more and more, and since then I've participated a couple of times in carnival parades. One of them was in the Caribbean, in Curaçao. And for me, it was a logical next step. So, to look first into ornamental things and decorations, but then also think about rituals, like big rituals we have as a society, and the place of artists in these big rituals. And I have the feeling that somehow artists are sometimes a little bit too shy, let's say like that, to step in this, to participate in this bigger event. Of course, there are a lot of examples of artists that did. But for me, it was interesting to look what could be my role in this carnival event.
And this, and what you're showing today, what looks almost like clothes, you're saying, or a suit that was part of that, thinking.
Yeah, that's a little bit part of this thinking. Like, and it's also it's almost impossible to wear. So it also expresses maybe the difficulty of the position of the artist to be part of this big. I don't know the good word in English for it, but this big party of the people, let's say like this. But it's a kind of armor, but it's like armor. For me, it symbolizes the armor of or weapons for non-violent weapons, but weapons for change. You know, for weapons for change. That's the best way to put it.
But I love that, and that is clear. But it's also, of course, it is impossible to wear, or very difficult to wear, I would imagine.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's almost impossible. So it has been one person has been wearing it to make pictures, and then for the rest it's shown on a wooden pedestal.
Well, it's exciting that you're having that opening tonight. I'm glad that we're talking to you on that day. It's been great talking. I want to ask you one more question about what you're reading now. I've been asking people that lately. Is there a book you're reading lately, or anything, doesn't have to be on topic, that you want to share with us?
Yeah, I just finished Franny and Zoe from Selinger. Huh. So I had a girlfriend that I have a girlfriend that studied philosophy, and somehow we came to the topic and see. And I read it already maybe 20 years ago. I couldn't remember very much what it was about. I think my English was not as good as as good then, not as good now. But and I reread it, and it was really really a nice book, very wise and beautiful story.
Really, you found it was what? Because I also read it a long time ago, and I should reread it again. But upon rereading it, you felt it was because some people say those things don't read as well now. You know, that these are about kind of wealthy kids or a certain kind of privilege. But I mean, as we were saying before, it's incredibly sensitively written, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very beautiful. It's a family story. It has a lot of stories at once. Also, very strange way it's written. Yeah, it's difficult to explain, but there's a lot of letters in this book, so it's a lot of perspective, change of perspective. And I think this wise kids, that there were used to be radio heroes, like with kids on the radio, but somehow I think our generation, we are all a little bit now like these princes and princesses, right? That are, not all of us, but a lot of people that live now in the Western world, we're a little bit like these kids, I think, with a lot of knowledge, and we've read a lot of books, and we've seen a lot of movies. So I think that is Franny and Zoe is very contemporary.
I think so, too. I'm glad you mentioned that. Yeah, sir, I want to thank you for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure to me, too. Thank you very much.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.